Hi, I'm Jack Carney, and this is The Comedy Show. Join us now for a very special program as we bring you part one of our two-part Jack Benny special. You'll hear interviews that we've done through the years with Dennis Day, Don Wilson, Mel Blanc, Frank Nelson, and, of course, Jack Benny himself. This is part one of the Jack Benny special. Benny was born Benjamin Kobelski on February 14, 1894. His father, Meyer, was an immigrant who owned a haberdashery in Waukegan, Illinois. Jack entered show business when he was 16, joining a piano player named Cora Salisbury to form a vaudeville act, Salisbury and Benny, from Grand Opera to Ragtime. Jack at that time used the name Ben K. Benny and didn't say a single word in the act. He played the $50 violin that his father had given him. In 1926, he met Sadie Marks, a hosiery clerk for the May Company in Los Angeles. They were married the following year. By 1932, Jack was a headliner on Broadway in the Earl Carroll Vanities. But he saw the approaching opportunities in the new medium of radio.
I quit a big show, Earl Carroll's Vanities. I had about 20 weeks to go. And I was making $1,500 or $1,700 a week, even then, before radio. And that was a lot of money. And I realized that the coming thing now was radio, and I'd better get into it. And I went to Earl Carroll, Carroll's Vanities, and I asked for a release. He finally gave it to me. And I showed him why he could. I said, you're going to play some small towns now. We've played New York and the big city. You really don't need me. You'll save $1,500 a week, and I'll try to get on radio. Well, then I went back, played a few theaters, and there wasn't much water left, as you know, it kept dying out. And finally, I went on Ed Sullivan. We were friends, and I went on Ed Sullivan's news show. And he did this thing, and I says, come on, be a guest. I said, what we do? Oh, he said, we'll prepare something. So I got on his show, and the agency for Canada Dry Ginger Ale heard me. And they gave me a job right away. I didn't start out by saying I want Love and Bloom as my theme song. I would have hated Love and Bloom as my theme song. I don't like it today as my theme song. I like it as a song. I was 36 for years. And I was 37 and 38. And we stopped at 39, for 39 is a funny number. 40 isn't. I'm going to develop a style. I don't think he would know I don't think he would know how to do that. I think you just find it. Innately, there's something that you do that you find out works for you. Some comedians talk very fast. They go from one joke to another joke to another joke, maybe topical humor. Now, I discovered when I first started to talk on the stage that that would not have been my style. My style was to talk on a subject and stay on the subject. We never did anything that we thought was going to last. We never framed anything. We never started anything that we said. For instance, I've never gone to my writers and they never went to me and came to me and said, let's make you a stingy character. Let's make Love and Broom your theme song. Let's have a feud between you and Fred Allen. See, if we'd have framed all of that ahead of time, it would have never worked out. It always started by an accident. By accident, we wrote a couple of stingy jokes. And then they got big laughs, so we each week or every third week, we would put in a few stingy jokes. But before I knew it, I was a stingy man.
Fellas, I'm going home.
Mr. Benny, do you want me to drive you?
No, thanks, kid. Such a nice evening, I think I'll walk.
Go on, boys.
Go on, Jack. See the weather, balmy. Spring is the nicest time of the year. Trees are green, flowers in bloom. Makes a fella feel good. Tick-tick, tipsy, goodbye, yeah. Where does Joel can get off thing? He doesn't go, yeah. Da-da-da-dum-bum-bum-bum.
Excuse me, mister.
Huh?
Are you still dying for a cup of coffee?
A dime? Well, let's see. I haven't got a dime. The smallest I have is a half a dollar.
I haven't eaten since yesterday.
Well, look. Look, buddy, here. Here, take the half a dollar.
Gee, mister. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Yum-bum-bing-bum-bum-bum. Gee, that was nice of me. He only asked me for a dime, and I gave him a half a dollar. I wonder if it's deductible. What's the difference?
Tick-tick-tick, goodbye. Half-half dollar, goodbye. Da-dee-da-dum-bum-dee-dum. Da-da-da-dum-dum-dee-um-bum-bum-bum-bum-bee-bum.
That fellow only asked me for a dime, and I gave him 50 cents. Yeah, I wish Luella had been there to see it. Maybe I'll call her when I get home. Well, here's my house. Wasn't such a long walk after all.
Boss, is that you?
Oh, Rochester, I didn't know you were home.
I'm in the kitchen.
Roger, isn't this your day off?
Yeah, but I thought I'd stay home and get caught with these dishes.
But look, you let a whole week's dishes accumulate. Why do you let them pile up like that?
It isn't my fault. It's that new soap you bought. We just can't get together.
What do you mean you and the soap can't get together?
When tired, in and I'm out.
Oh, say, Rochester, on the way home...
All right, excuse me, boss. I want to put these clean dishes away.
Rochester, you know, on my way home, some poor fella asked me for a dime.
Uh-huh.
But I gave him 50 cents. Roger, why'd you drop those dishes? All I said was I gave a man 50 cents. push that second sack off the drain board.
I didn't touch him. It jumped off. I didn't care.
What a mess.
Fork, look at me.
Huh?
Did you really give a man 50 cents?
I certainly did, Rochester. And, you know, if I had known the wonderful feeling, the warm glow I get from being generous, I would have started earlier in life.
Oh, would you like to talk about my salary?
Mañana. The word I picked up in Palm Springs. Well, Rochester, I've had a long day, so I think I'll go to bed.
Okay, good night, boss.
Good night. Tut, say goodbye. Tut-tut-tut-tut, don't cry. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da
never be as kind.
Oh, my goodness, I almost forgot. Dear Diary, April 9th, 1950. Today, I did a wonderful thing. A needy person asked me for a dime for a cup of coffee, and I gave him 50 cents.
Rochester, what happened in the kitchen?
I don't know. I'm dead.
Two subjects sure to get laughs on the Benny radio show and later the television show were Jack's age and his stinginess. On rare occasions on the radio show, his writers were able to work both topics into the same story.
There's the front door.
You want me to get it, boss?
No, I'll get it. Yes?
How do you do? My name is Martindale. I represent a law firm that specializes in settling estates and tracing legal heirs.
Legal heirs?
Yes. Does Mr. Jack Benny live here?
Oh, I'm Jack Benny.
Well, then it's very possible that you're the man I'm looking for. May I come in?
Yes.
Have a seat, Mr. Martindale.
Mr. Benny, if you're the man we're looking for, an aunt whom you have never seen has left you a legacy of
$5,000.
$5,000?
Hey, kid! Kid, come on in here!
What is it, Jack?
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, what?
You tell them, Mr. Martindale.
Certainly.
We have reason to believe that Mr. Benny's Aunt Matilda, whom he has never met, left him $5,000.
Hey, that's wonderful.
Yes, yeah. Where's the money?
Aunt Matilda.
I've got the check right here in my briefcase. Oh, but first I'll have to verify a few facts.
Oh, of course. Go ahead, mister. Ask me anything you want. Good old Aunt Matilda. I'm sorry about this interruption, Mr. Martindale.
Oh, that's quite all right, Mr. Benny.
Now, I'll answer any questions, and then you can give me the $5,000 my Aunt Matilda left to me.
Jack.
Huh?
Jack, come here a minute.
What is it, Mary?
Jack, Bob and I have been talking it over. If your Aunt Matilda never saw you, why should she leave you all that money?
Because she was my own flesh and blood.
Jack, if she had any of your blood, she wouldn't leave anything to anybody.
Quiet. Okay, Mr. Martindale, I'll answer those questions now.
Very well.
Mr. Benny, were you born in Waukegan, Illinois?
Yes.
You see, Mary?
You see, it's me.
And at the age of 6, you started to practice a musical instrument.
That's right.
And that instrument was?
The violin.
I still play it. The violin. I play the violin.
A fiddle.
You graduated from Central Elementary School and went to Waukegan High School.
That's right.
At the age of 17, you left Waukegan, became an actor, and went
into vaudeville. I played the violin in the vaudeville.
I'm sure that further questioning is unnecessary. I'm firmly convinced that you're the man we're looking for.
Where's the money?
Just a minute. Here's one question I neglected to check. How old are you?
39.
39?
Well, that's strange. Every other answer seemed to fit, but the Jack Benny we're looking for was born in 1894, and that would make him 59.
Hmm. Mr. Martindale, it must be me. There was no other Jack Benny born in Waukegan who plays a violin.
I'm sorry, but the Jack Benny we're looking for, who gets this $5,000, was born in 1894 and is 59 years old.
Hmm. Well, 59?
Yes.
Well,
this is a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Mr. Martindale, I'm sorry, but I'm not the Jack Benny you're looking for. I am only 39.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Benny. I was hoping my search was over.
Oh, good day.
Goodbye, Mr. Martindale.
Da-da-dee-da-dum, da-dee-da-dum.
Jack.
What is it, Mary?
I can't believe what I just heard.
What do you mean you can't believe it?
Jack, all you had to do was to say you were 59 and you would have gotten the money.
Uh-huh.
But by insisting that you were 39, you lost $5,000.
That's right.
I can't understand it. Why?
Mary, I may not be a spendthrift, but I know a bargain when I see one.
Bargain?
Where else can you buy 20 years for
$5,000? The stories about Jack Benny's stinginess were always exaggerated.
Oh, Mr. Benny.
Yeah.
Well, Roy and I have finished cleaning up the house, and Roy's about to leave, and, well, I thought you might want to show your appreciation.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, Roy.
Yes, Mr. Benny.
I want to thank you for helping Rochester, and here, this is for you. One, two, three, four, five.
Five, Mr. Benny?
Yes. Bring your friends. They might enjoy the broadcast, too. Really a good one, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Benny. I'm sure we'll enjoy the show. Goodbye.
Wait a minute, Roy. Wait a minute. Before you go, I want to give you some money, too.
Oh, that's not necessary.
Yes, it is, but I'll tell you what. I'll play a little game with you. Now, just a minute. There. Now, I've got some money in my fist, and if you can guess how much it is, it's yours. I'll give you three guesses.
Okay. $1?
No.
$2?
No.
Let me see. Could it be three?
Or... Ah, you're going in the wrong direction.
He is now. I've got a $5 bill. Here it is, Roy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Benny. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Goodbye. See you next week, Rochester.
Goodbye, Roy. May I say something personal to you?
What is it, Rochester?
Well, I'm convinced you're getting more generous all the time.
Really?
Yeah. I'll never forget the first time you played that game with me. I never guessed how much you had in your fist.
Let's see. What did I have?
3 francs, 4 yen, and a peso.
Oh, yes. I did a lot of traveling that year. Rochester... I forgot to ask you, were there any phone calls for me?
No, but while you were asleep, a policeman from the Beverly Hills Traffic Division came to see you. He'll be back later. He wants to see you personally.
Oh, my goodness. What do he want?
Well, the city wants to put parking meters in front of your house.
Well, why does he have to see me personally?
Well, he wants you to take yours down first.
Jack Benny's announcer, Don Wilson, who died in April of 1982, spent more than 35 years with the Benny Show. He joined the show the same year that the Bennys adopted a 6-week-old girl who they named Joan. That was in 1934.
I was with the NBC radio outlet, KFI, in Los Angeles at the time, and I was doing sports, among other things. I headed the announcing department, but I was also doing football, particularly. And I was doing the games that were on the Pacific Coast on the NBC network. And I wound up on the Rose Bowl game for several years, beginning about 1929, 30, 31, 32, and 33. And that's what took me into New York. The boys in New York at NBC figured that perhaps I had something that they were interested in. So they invited me, John Royal, who was then vice president in charge of all programs, who's the vice president emeritus of NBC now, God bless his soul, invited me to join NBC in New York as their sports announcer. This was in the fall of 33. And I went back and joined NBC in New York at that time. And in the spring of 1934, I was drawn into an audition of the staff members of NBC that were available and all the freelance men around town, because Jack Benny, the great comedian, was changing clients in at the end of 26 weeks of the 33-34 season. And I was drawn into that audition, and I just got awful lucky, I guess. And I don't guess, I know I got awfully lucky, but I happened to laugh in the right places in the audition and reading the script with Jack and one of his writers at that time. So I got the job. And it turned out to be a 35-year association on the Benny Show, which is almost a full-time job all the way through.
Hey, we're lucky, fellas. It isn't crowded at all.
Yeah, we can have our regular table.
Well, let's sit down.
Hey, Jack wants to finish his business at the studio. He's standing on the corner on the other side of the street.
I wonder what the private business was he had to take care of.
Oh, he went up to see Mr. Ackerman, the vice president of CBS. This is the day Jack is giving the network his ultimatum.
Oh, what ultimatum?
Either CBS gives him free parking or he's going back to NBC.
See, that'll never work.
Well, why not?
That's why he left NBC in the first place.
That's right.
Oh, here we are, Jack. Okay. Sorry I took so long. What did you kids order?
Oh, nothing. We were waiting for you.
Oh, then I'll call the waitress. Oh, miss? Miss?
What do you want, Mac?
We'd like to order some food. Do you have a menu?
Yeah, here.
Thanks. Now, let me see. Hey, wait a minute. This is the menu from the Brown Derby.
I know. The stuff on ours would turn your stomach.
Say, look, miss, all I want is just an egg sandwich and a glass of milk.
I'll have the same. Okay.
Now, miss.
What do you want, cap on, boy?
Now, wait a minute, miss. Maybe I have to take those kind of insults when I'm on the radio, but I don't have to take them from you.
Gee, I'm sorry, Mac. I didn't know you were sensitive.
Well, I am. You don't have to presume I'm not sensitive just because I'm a big fat slob.
John Wilson was, beyond question, a very important ingredient in the Benny Show. But I asked him if he had any influence in actually putting the shows together.
None whatsoever. The shows were put together by Jack and the writers. Jack was an idea man. He would have ideas for shows that he thought were good, and he'd tell them to the writers, and the writers would develop them. And then, when we got into rehearsal, Jack was a man with a blue pencil, because he was a great editor of material, getting material out that he felt wouldn't pay off or was not good for the show or the particular members on the show. And his judgment never failed. But the nice part about Jack was that he would never get so adamant that if the writers felt that the idea they had and the treatment they had was thing that would pay off, why, he'd say, well, I can be wrong, so let's try it. But 9 times out of 10, Jack would be proven correct. So that his judgment of what was good for the show, for him, for all the members of the cast, was darn near infallible. And he was very broad-minded with the whole thing, and he was a very generous man in the way he built his supporting people up, which was one of the things that made Jack Benny so great. And one of the things that made the Jack Benny show so great was the fact that the supporting people on the show were built up by Benny. Now, this was contrary to some other top-flight comedians who I'll not mention their names at this time, but I also worked with. And if a supporting player got a laugh line in the rehearsal, that supporting player never had that line on the show. The star took the laugh line. So that one of the things that made the Benny show pay off so beautifully for everybody was the fact that Jack realized that the bigger he could make the supporting people on the show, the bigger it made the show, the greater comedian, the more popular comedian it made Jack.
Gee, it's a beautiful lobby, isn't it, Don?
Sure is. A lot of people here, too.
Yeah. You wait here, Don. I'm going over and talk to the room clerk. This hotel really is...
May I help you, sir?
Yeah, I'd like to get a room here.
Well, it's quite an honor having you visit the hotel, Mr. Benny.
Oh, you know who I am?
Yes, I saw you once in the movies.
You did?
Yes, you were sitting right next to me.
Oh, well, thank you. Now, I'd like to get a room.
Yes, sir. Now, let me see. Here's one, $250.
$250? Isn't that kind of expensive?
Well, that's not the price. That's the room number.
Oh, I see. It's on the second floor.
Yes, sir. Has a beautifully decorated bedroom, magnificently furnished sitting room, luxurious dressing room, and a huge entry hall.
Well, that sounds nice. What's the rate on it?
$16.
Well, that I won't discuss at all. Now, look, clerk, I've had a...
Jack, what are you staring at?
That cash register. I've never seen anything so beautiful.
Well, that's a slot machine.
A slot machine? Oh, I've heard about them, but this is the first one I've ever seen. How do they work?
Well, you put in a nickel and pull the handle, and if two cherries come up, you get 5 nickels back.
Well, that's fair.
And if three oranges come up, you get 11 nickels.
Say, that's fine.
Now, if three bells come up, you get 18 nickels.
No kidding.
And if three bars come up, you get the jackpot.
Well, that's sensational. But supposing I put my nickel in and none of those things you mentioned come up.
Well, in that case, you lose your nickel.
Well, that's ridiculous. Thing like that'll never catch on. Believe me.
Come on, Jack, let's go.
Just a minute, Don. Now, look, clerk, I'm willing to stay here if you'll lower the rate. Let me speak to the manager.
Very well, he's right here. Mr. Benny, this is Mr. Schiller, the manager of the Flamingo.
Oh, I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Schiller.
How do you do?
Look, Mr. Schiller, I want to get a room and get some rest. I just drove all the way from Beverly Hills to Las Vegas.
Well, Mr. Benny, if you'll give me the keys to your car, I'll have the bellboy park it.
Yeah, it's that Maxwell right out in front.
Oh, is that your car?
Yes.
Well, then we owe you an apology. We're using it to mow the lawn.
Well, leave the grass in it. It'll make the seat softer. Now, look, Mr. Schiller, I'm very anxious to stay at the Flamingo, but it seems that your clerk and I can't get together. He's so stubborn. Don't you have any less expensive rooms?
Yes, we have some for $5 and some for $7.
$5 and $7. Gee, I don't...
I'm sorry, Mr. Benny, but there's nothing I can do for you. You see, I have no authority to change the rate.
Well, there must be somebody I can talk to, isn't
there? Well, here's the general manager. Oh, Mr. Chappelle.
Yes?
Do you mind talking to this gentleman?
Why, not at all. How do you do?
How do you do? I'm Jack Benny, star of stage, screen, and radio.
Oh, Jack Benny, certainly. I saw your last picture.
Really? Did you like it?
No.
Have you ever heard me on radio?
Yes.
Well, do you like me?
No.
Well, have you ever seen me on television?
No.
Good. Now, look, Mr. Chappelle, the reason I wanted to see you is because Mr. Schiller is trying to tell me that the lowest rate you have here is $5 a day.
Well, Mr. Benny, $5 a day for a room is very reasonable.
$5 a day, but I intend to stay for about 7 days.
Well, I'm sure you'd enjoy staying at the Flamingo. It cost $6 million to build it.
Well, what are they trying to do, get it all back from me?
Come on, Jack, Jack. I'm leaving. Everybody in the place is looking at
me. Don, this won't take long.
Look, Mr. Benny, I'm a very busy man. I've got a lot of things to do. I'll give you a room for $4.
You're faded. I mean, I'll take it.
Well, here's your key, Mr. Benny.
Thank you.
Come on, Jack. Let's go.
Just a minute, Don. I have a nickel here. I'm going to put it in the slot machine. Yeah, I hope I win.
Jack, you forgot to tip the bellboy who brought your bags in.
You take care of it, Don. I haven't got any change. Come on, let's go.
Jack Benny was the master of the running gag. His hairline, his age, his stinginess, and the peculiarities of the other members of the cast all added to the hilarity every week. Phil Harris's drinking, Dennis Day's total insanity, and of course, Don Wilson's weight.
Many people would ask me, said, don't you get sick and tired of them making fun of your weight? And I said, I don't mind it at all, as long as they pay for it.
Oh, the front door.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Don. Come on in. You know, Don, when the doorbell rang, I knew it was you standing on the front porch.
How did you know?
Because I didn't have to walk to the door. I slid. It was downhill. It was that simple.
Ha, 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 some joke. Very funny.
Huh?
Big comedian, always making cracks at my expense.
Don, I don't know why you should always be so sensitive about it. After all, you are fat.
I'll tell you why I resent it. Not my fault I'm so heavy, it's my glands.
Your glands?
Yeah, they weigh 200 pounds.
You got a small gland, like 75 pounds?
Look, it's about time you stop kidding me about being fat. Everybody who knows you says you're becoming somewhat chubby yourself.
Me? That's ridiculous. For the past dozen years, my weight has always been 160 pounds.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'll bet you weigh a lot more than 160 pounds right now.
Don, I'll prove to you that you're wrong. Now, follow me. I have some scales in the bathroom. We'll see just how much I do weigh. Here we are. Now, here. Here's the scale. I'll get on. All right, I'm on it, Don.
Yeah. And look what it says. 169 pounds.
Say, it does say that. Can't understand how I gained so much. Oh, I know what the extra 9 pounds is. No, I left my wallet in my other pants. I'm gaining weight. Don, you get on. I want to see how much you weigh.
Well, all right. See, I never saw that before. A card coming out of a bathroom scale.
Not a card. That's a spring. Imagine me being so much overweight. I'm going to go right on a diet and eat nothing but rye crisp and lettuce.
Oh, Jack, that's fine. But I'll tell you something. I just started.
What?
Well, last week I joined the Beverly Wilshire Health Club, and I exercise in the gym over there. I take steam baths and massages and everything.
Hey, that sounds great.
Yeah, it is. In fact, I'm on my way there now. How about you joining me?
Don, you got a deal. Let's go. Don, where's your car?
You want to lose weight, you got to walk a lot.
You're right. I'll tell Rochester I'm leaving.
Oh, Rochester!
Yes, boss?
I'm going over to the Beverly Wilshire Health Club.
Shall I get your car out?
No, I'm going to walk.
Coward!
Stop with those cracks about my car.
Come on, Don. Let's go.
Let's get back to Jack and Don Wilson. We left them in the steam room at the health club.
How long have we been in the steam room now, Don?
No, about a half hour.
She will have to get out soon. I can't take too much of this heat, you know.
It is awfully hot in here.
I'll say. Boy, I haven't sweated like this since they closed the banks in 1933. Let's get out of here.
Okay. Hey, Jack, put on these trunks.
Gee, this club provides everything.
Yeah, it really does. Now let's put on these terry cloth bathrobes and go into the gym and meet the instructor.
I'm right with you.
Oh, here's the instructor now.
Hello, Mr. Walton.
Hello, K.O. Jack, this is K.O. Stevens. K.O., this is Jack Benny.
Hey. Jack Benny from radio and television?
Yes, pleased to meet you, K.O.
The feeling is mutual.
You know, Jack, K.O. used to be a prize fighter.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Benny. I had my first fight in 1940.
Really?
Really? Yep. I spent 12 years in the ring.
12 years, huh?
Yep, but I finally came to, got up, and went home. Okay, gentlemen, take off your bathrobes.
All right.
Now, before we start, Mr. Benny, I want to see your physique so I can know what exercises to give you. Turn around a couple times.
All right. Well, how do I look?
No wonder you get last when you say you're 39.
What?
I think I'll start you and Mr. Wilson off with a regular bending exercise. You ready?
I'm ready, K.O.
Me too.
Yeah, okay, now as I count, bend down and touch the floor.
Okay.
One, two, three, four. Bend down and touch the floor. One, two, three.
Mr. Wilson...
You ain't doing it right.
What's wrong?
Well, you're supposed to touch the floor with your fingers, not your stomach.
Yes, Don, you're not getting any benefit out of it.
Hey, look, I think that'll be all for today.
That's all?
Yeah, there's no sense in overdoing it the first time.
Say, K.O., I don't want to get personal, but I'd like to ask you why boxers always do that.
Do what?
Whenever boxers talk, they go all the time.
Well, I don't know why the rest of them do it, but I got a cold.
I'm glad you explained it.
Yeah. Well, I'll go back in the steam room for about 10 minutes before going home.
Okay, come on, Don. Let's see. This is a steam room here. Gee, the steam is much thicker than when we left. I can't see a thing.
Yeah, same here. Doesn't seem as hot, though.
Yeah. Let's see if we can find a place to sit down.
I can't see.
Neither can I, but follow me. Maybe we can find... Whoops! Sorry I bumped into you.
That's all right. I can't see a thing either.
Don! Don! What's a woman doing in the steam room?
This is no steam room. This is Santa Monica Boulevard.
Well, Well, I'll be darned. The smog is off. Come on, Don. Let's get back in.
As I said, Don Wilson's weight was always good for a laugh on the Benny Show.
Come in.
Hi, Jack.
Why, Donzie, come on in. What are you doing here, Don?
Well, Jack, you know the little woman's out of town, so I just thought I'd drop by and see if you'd like to take in a movie with me.
A movie? Gee, I'm glad you thought of it. That's a wonderful idea. I didn't have anything to do tonight. I've been to a movie in months. Maybe Dennis will go with us.
Dennis? Where's he?
He's standing under your stomach. Dennis?
Please don't laugh, Don. I'm too young to die.
We'll hear from Frank Nelson. You remember Frank Nelson on the Jack Benny Show? We'll hear from the Sportsman Quartet and many other regulars on the show. Coming very shortly. Incidentally, the Sportsmen are Marty Spurzel, Max Smith, Gurney Bell, and Bill Days, in case anybody ever asks you while you're playing trivia. A very special comedy show about a very special comedy figure. It was Johnny Carson a few years ago who said that Jack Benny was the greatest comedian who ever lived. And I doubt that there are many today, those who remember the years, the era of the Jack Benny Show, or those who only have the transcriptions and the recordings left behind, I doubt there are many who would disagree. In this hour, we'll hear from Phil Harris for many years, a Benny standby and the band leader on the show. We'll hear about the Fred Allen feud, the true story of the feud. And we'll also hear about the Jack Benny movies. By the way, every Jack Benny movie made money except one. And he was paid $100,000 per film. That's interesting today when movie stars earn like $2 million for a movie and a percentage of the profits. Did I mention Frank Nelson? What a familiar voice on the Benny shows. Frank Nelson was a regular and a very funny regular on every Benny show. He joined Jack Benny in California.
He came out to the West Coast in 1934. And he came out here to do something in pictures, if I remember correctly. And I was called, this is when NBC was over on the back end of the RKO lot, when Howard Hughes owned it. And so I was called to come down to a 5-minute insert that was going to be used on an Eastern show. And if you remember, in those early days, reversing the lines was an extremely expensive thing. And there was really no transcontinental radio originating out of here except one show, which was called the RKO Theater of the Air, which was for RKO, and it was kind of plugging their products, and it was not a sponsored show. And Jack came in. They had this 5-minute spot, and I was called in to do the other part on it. What it was, he was on the train coming out, and he meets this rather personable young fellow, and he's talking to him about the fact that he's going to California, and he's going to be in pictures, and the other fellow is very polite, but rather noncommittal, and finally says, you know, he says, you look like a personable young man. Possibly I could do something for you. My name's Jack Benny. What's yours? And the answer was Clark Gable. And that was the part that I played. So that was the first thing I did with him, and then I did, two or three more things of that nature, small things, and then he brought his regular show out here, and I just did odds and ends with him. There's no particular part. And finally, one day, the boys wrote a yes in, and I happened to stretch it a little, and it got a laugh. And the next week, I was on again, and they said, let's try that thing again. And I said, well, what do you mean, what thing? They said, well, you know, you kind of stretched the yes, and it got a laugh. Let's see if it works. And that's really the way the character began. And then they write things like, oh, and I do, see what I do with it, and well, and I just did the gimmick thing with it in each case. I mean, it was just a voice thing, and so the character became a regular on the show, and I was with him all through the years.
Mind my suitcase, Mary. I'll be right back. Now, let's see. There's so many magazines here, I don't know which one to get. Oh, mister.
Yes?
to run into him. Now, look, mister, all I want to do is buy a magazine.
Okay. Do you want to read it or tear it in half to show me how strong you are?
I want to read it. And I'll take this one here.
Well, house and garden, aren't you lucky?
What?
Today only, with every copy, we give away a pocket full of fertilizer.
Now, look, Clark, I can't stand here all day. So I'll take this magazine here, this copy of the Saturday Evening Post.
Yes, sir, that'll be 15 cents.
Here you are.
You want it gift-wrapped, I suppose.
You burn me up, you stupid jerk.
When you come round, I go berserk.
Train now leaving for Albuquerque.
Now cut that out!
During his years with the Benny Show, Frank Nelson feels that he was typecast.
Although it was fun to work with Jack, and I enjoyed every minute of that, I did not enjoy doing that character all those years, because what happens to you is you get trapped by a character. I started out in this business as a leading man. I played opposite many of the picture stars in the early days of radio out here. And on the old Hollywood Hotel, Lorene Tuttle was the leading woman. I was the leading man opposite the male and female stars that came on the show. And I worked mainly in the dramatic area of radio for a number of years. And basically, I went to comedy because there was more money there. They'd pay you like three times as much to do a comedy routine that ran 2 or 3 minutes as they would to sweat out a long, tough, hard lead on a dramatic show. But the thing that happened eventually was that you got trapped by the character. And just to illustrate that, one day the phone rang, and my wife picked up the phone and said, "It's for you." And I picked it up, and there was a man on there, and he said, "Look, I'm producing such and such a show." And he said, "You were recommended to me, but I know you do the Jack Benny Show, but tell me, do you do anything besides the yes?" And I was so damn mad, I said, no, I don't. That's all I'm capable of doing," and hung up. Well, that's a fine way to throw away a show. I said, "Well, any idiot calls up and asks you that, I've got to give him that answer." I mean, it just infuriated me. But that is what happened, and it happened especially when you got to television. You see, in radio, you could do anything your voice would let you do. So you didn't get trapped early on in radio because of that. But finally, even in radio, they began to think of you as a comedian or as a fellow who did comedy. But so far as working with Jack, I thoroughly enjoyed that through all the years. First place, you had material on the Jack Benny Show that you didn't get anywhere else. If you stopped and analyzed Jack's shows, if you were to pick up his scripts and read them, you'd realize Jack didn't have any funny lines. Jack was funny because of his character and because of the things that he fed to other people. But, and he did that because he had a supreme confidence in himself, because he knew that he was truly a top, top comedian. There were many other comedians who weren't near that secure. If you had a good joke, they'd take it away from you and use it themselves. But Jack did just the opposite with his people. He gave all of the funny material, really, to the people that worked with him.
Mary, let's go get a hot dog. Huh?
But, Jack, we're in the clubhouse. Why not have lunch?
Well, all right. Oh, waiter! Waiter! Yeah. We'd like to get something to eat. What would you suggest?
Another waiter. I can't stand you.
I don't care whether you can or not. Now, what can we get in a hurry?
Well, we have roast pork, corned beef, leg of lamb, sirloin tips, and bacon and eggs.
Bacon and eggs. Sounds good. Are the eggs fresh?
Ooh, are they?
Oh, well, I'll have that. How about you, Mary? Would you like bacon and eggs?
Ooh, what a...
Just bring us our orders, waiter, as quickly as you can.
Yes, sir, and I'll seat you at table number one. That's right over there.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, the last race was a photo finish, but you won't know the results till tomorrow.
See, that's strange.
The picture turned out so good that we've decided to show it at your neighborhood theater.
Now, Mary, let's look over the list of entries for the next race. I want to see if the...
Bunt.
Huh?
Come here a minute.
me?
Yeah.
What is it?
You gonna eat here?
Yeah.
What table?
Table one.
Uh-uh.
What?
Take number nine.
Well, look, I'm very happy with table one.
Well, think it over, bud. Number one is a card table.
A card table?
Yeah. If it carries too much weight, its legs will fold.
Gee, I never thought of that. So you think I ought to take table number nine?
Well, certainly. Look at the breeding.
The breeding?
It's by Bird's Eye Maple out of Grand Rapids.
Gosh, I didn't think they even knew each other.
Get wise, bud. Think it over.
Look, I'm not... Wait a minute. This is the first time I've run into you at a racetrack. Why don't you give me a tip on a horse?
Who knows about horses?
What?
So long, sucker.
Mary, have you figured out yet what a horse...
You're making legs already. I put them on table number one.
Number one? Do you think I'm a sucker? We'll eat at table number nine.
Table nine? The shiny mahogany one?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but you can't eat at that table.
Why not?
It would scratch.
Now, come on! I don't know why you had to be our waiter. You make me sick.
Well, you're not penicillin to me either.
Earlier in the show, we heard from several of the regulars on the show, Don Wilson and Frank Nelson. Another of the great regular performers was band leader Phil Harris. He joined the radio show in 1936.
I don't know if you realize this or not, but everybody that worked for Jack Benny when I did was exclusive. They couldn't work for anybody else. Don Wilson could never go on another show unless he got permission from Jack. Mary Livingston, his wife, couldn't. I couldn't. Rochester couldn't. See, Jack Benny was anything from what he portrayed. I mean, he was anything but a Scrooge. I mean, we were making so much money that we didn't know what to do with it. And enough that we didn't have to work with anybody else. And then Jack used to come to you about every 6 months and say, go to a guy by the name of Blum, at that time was his manager, and say, tell him to give you some more money. I said, Jack, I don't need any more money. I said, you got me off of the road. This is the first time I ever had a house. And he says, I know, but tell him to give you... I said, what for? All I'm doing now is... hey, Jackson, hello, Mary, here comes Rochester. I had three lines. And he used to say, go get some more money. So I'd go and tell Blum to give me some more money. The next Sunday, I'd be sitting over in the restaurant on Vine Street, and Jack would say, hey, if you got a quarter, I want to get a couple of Robert Burns cigars.
Oh, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. Hello, folks. Here's little old Harris on the day after Christmas, so cheer me from Alaska to the Panama, Isthmus. Lay it up.
How do you like an entrance like that? Phil.
What?
Phil, how in the world can you walk out on the stage like that and ask an audience to applaud you?
Jackson, when you ain't got talent, you gotta have guts.
Now,
say, Jack, I want to talk to you about the commercial. The boys.
Hiya, Donzo.
Well, hello, Phil.
Hey, Don, I want to congratulate you on being picked the number one announcer on the air.
Well, thank you, Phil. Now, I don't want to seem immodest or undignified, but the honor will certainly lend to my prestige.
Phil, in this thing about Don, if you're referring to that article in Fame magazine, you know, there was something about me in it, too.
I wouldn't know about that, Jackson. My kids must have skipped that part when they read it to me.
Your kids read it to you? Phil, aren't you ashamed to let your children know you can't read?
No, Jackson, they love it. They think I'm a character.
What?
Whenever I do something, the little one nudges the big one and says, get him.
Well, I gotta say one thing, Phil. For a guy like you, you've got a wonderful family.
Well, thanks, Jackson. Hey, by the way, I was just going to ask you if you want to go hunting with me. I'm going up the High Sierras again.
The High Sierras?
Yeah.
Oh, are you going to hunt? Oh, no. Oh,
no, you're not going to catch me with that gag again. Go work it on somebody else.
Say, Phil, what are you going to do this New Year's Eve?
Well, me and Remley are going around frightening people, you know, like we did on Halloween.
Frightening people?
Yeah, what fun we had. We made up like ghosts and went to a nightclub where Maxie Rosenbloom and Maxie Bear were doing their act.
What's exciting about that?
Well, here's what happened. See, Remley started off by going into Rosenbloom's dressing room and began to haunt him.
Oh, and did you haunt Bear?
No, I had his sheet on. You had to go a long way for that one, but it was worth the trip. Well, so long, kid.
Bye, Phil.
So long, Phil.
One of the most successful running situations on the Benny Radio Show was his feud with another radio performer, Fred Allen. That feud lasted a long, long time. It started in 1938.
This, I actually remember, started the feud because the feud started the week before when a little 10-year-old boy played the violin. And when he got through, Fred, knowing that I always listened to his radio show, he made some derogatory remark. He said, to think that a boy 10 years old can play the violin like that, Jack Benny ought to be ashamed of himself. And I jumped on it.
And that reminds me, come here a minute, Don. Did you hear Fred Allen last Wednesday night?
Oh, sure. It was a swell program. It was really great.
Don't review it, Don. Just answer yes or no. Did you hear Allen make those innuendos? You know, those slurring remarks about my violin playing?
Yes, I did.
Pretty catty, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. He was just kidding, and you're taking it seriously.
Well, so would Heifetz or any other musician. Well, as I live and breathe and stand under a strong light so people won't mistake the wrinkles in my face for a washboard, oh, if it ain't Portland. I mean, Mary. Hope he heard that.
What's the matter with you, Jack?
Plenty. Did you hear Fred Allen Wednesday?
Yeah. Gee, that was a funny program. Yeah. What laughs? Wow.
Don't elaborate, you little traitor. The way you talk about my violin playing, I ought to sue him.
You ought to sue your teacher, too.
That's all. Imagine saying that I couldn't play Flight of the Bumblebee at the age of 10. I played Flight of the Bumblebee so often, I got the hive.
I bet you strung up the whole town with it.
Benny, you're so tight, you've not only got the first dollar you ever earned, you've got the guy's right arm that handed it to you.
Well, it was loose.
Now, let me tell you something, Alan. I'll throw you out of here so fast you look like a jockey on a skyrocket. Now, you've gone too far, Benny. One more crack and I'll hit you on top of the head so hard you can tie your shoes with your teeth.
Oh, you will, eh?
Yes, I will. I'm taking my Boy Scout knife and getting out of here.
That's fine. Thanks for coming over, you town hall Buddha.
You're welcome, you Waukegan whippersnapper. Goodbye.
The Benny Allen feud started on March 27th, 1938, and was still going strong 12 years later in August of 1950.
Come in. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Rochester.
Well, Fred! Fred Allen! Well, Fred, this is a surprise.
Really? When did you get in town?
Last night. Last night? Well, why didn't you call me at my hotel?
You mean you're staying at one that has phones?
Well, no, but there's a candy store in the lobby that takes messages. Oh, I see.
Hey, boss, as long as Mr. Allen's in town, why don't you put him on your stage show?
Well, thank you, Rochester, but I couldn't very well go out on a stage now. I haven't got any material.
Well, don't you have any of your old vaudeville routines left?
Well, if I did, I'd be on television.
It'd be great if you could join me on my stage show, Fred.
Well, I'd really love to, Jack, but I have to rush back to Hollywood. I've been offered the lead in a new picture.
A new picture?
No dimension. It's a new thing that's coming out. When it comes out, you don't dimension the whole thing.
So far, that's better than what we've got written here.
In this picture,
you, Jack. Yes? I play the part of a test pilot in Los Angeles.
I see.
The picture is called Breaking the Smog Barrier.
It's a shame you can't stay over, Fred, so we could appear together. It'd be like old times.
Say, Mr. Barry, did you and Mr. Allen once do an act together in vaudeville?
We sure did, Rochester. We had a lot of fun in those days.
Oh, gosh. Remember, Jack, how we'd always celebrate with a big dinner at Lindy's every time we got a job?
Yeah, we'd always get the best. Shrimp cocktail, turtle soup, chef salad,
filet mignon, stuffed potatoes, strawberry shortcake.
Then I'd top it all off with a big glass of Ovaltine.
Ovaltine?
Well, he wanted to be asleep when the check came.
Those were the good old days. I'll never forget the time we rehearsed and polished our act for weeks. And we went to see Mickey Rockford, the biggest booking agent in New York. Come on, Fred. I think Mr. Rockford's office is down the hall.
Hey, it's crowded in here, Jack.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to talk to the secretary. Miss, we'd like to see Mr. Rockford.
Do you have an appointment?
Appointment? Yes. We're Benny and Allen.
Benny and Allen?
Yes. Yeah. Don't you recognize us?
Why? Is there a reward?
You don't understand, girlie. We do a vaudeville act.
Really? Which one throws the fish?
Say, that is clever. Miss, you ought to be in show business yourself.
Me in show business?
Yes. I know a magician who saws a woman in half. You'd look better in two pieces.
Fred, look, miss, we don't want to argue. We'd just like to see our agent, Mr. Rockford.
Well, first I'll need some information. Now, what's the name of your act again?
Allen and Benny.
I thought you said it was Benny and Allen.
Well, at 2 o'clock, our billing changes.
Well, what kind of an act do you do?
Violin, clarinet, and snappy patter.
Uh-huh. And where have you played?
Oh, all over.
Well, where?
Well, just tell her the important dates, Jack.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, we did a week in Sow Belly, Wyoming. A week in Loose Tooth, Arizona. 3 days in Stagnant Water, New Mexico. And we also played the Palace here in New York.
Sow Belly, Loose Tooth, Stagnant Water, in the Palace. Well, at least you worked your way up.
No, we played the Palace first.
Well, Mr. Rockford's busy right now, so just have a seat and I'll call you.
All right.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Allen, I don't mean to be personal, but are you an American citizen?
Yes, I got these slant eyes from pulling off a tight derby.
Get back to Jack Benny and Fred Allen waiting to see their agent, Mr. Rockford.
Yes. Oh, very well, Mr. Rockford. Oh, boys, Mr. Rockford will see you now.
Good. Come on, Fred, let's go in.
Okay.
Oh, come on in, fellas. Come on in. Close the door. Sit down.
Thank you. Mr. Rockford, I'm Jack Benny. This is Fred Allen.
That's right, Mr. Rockford. Remember, you booked our act in the Palace 7 years ago.
Oh, yes. What business are you in now?
Well, we're still in show business.
Yes, and we thought you could book us.
Please, fellas.
Our new act is sensational. At least give us a chance, Mr. Rockford.
Yes, all we need is one good break, you know.
I gave you a break when I put you in Lowe's Flatbush.
Some break. They opened with Fink's Mules, then Major Doty's Dogs came out, then Manny's Monkeys, then Powers Dancing Elephants.
So what?
Well, by the time we came out, we looked like the last two passengers on Noah's Ark.
Well, look,
boys. I'm very busy. And
please, Mr. Rockford, just listen to our opening number. It'll only take a second.
All right, but before you... Oh, excuse me. Hey, come in.
Mr. Rockford, here's the 10% commission I owe you for booking my act last week.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, wait a minute. The cute boy. Sonny, what's your name?
Eddie Cantor.
Eddie Cantor?
Potatoes are cheaper. Tomatoes are cheaper. Now's the time to fall in love.
About listening to our new act.
Oh, all right, if you insist. Ready with your clarinet, Fred?
Ready.
Okay. One, two.
Benny,
have you heard that they're making women's bathing suits out of spun glass?
Women's bathing suits out of glass? Well, that's worth looking into.
I'll take it, Mr. Allen,
if you will.
Music once saved my uncle's life.
Well, how did music save your uncle's life?
They played the Star Spangled Banner just as he was sitting in the electric chair.
Take it, Mr.
Mr. Allen,
I want you to meet my new girl. Her name is Well Enough.
Why do you call your girl Well Enough?
Because I want the boys to leave Well Enough alone.
His head out of the drawer. Maybe he's looking for a contract.
Fellas.
Yes, Mr. Rockford.
To tell you the truth, fellas, I'm confused. The whole act leaves me cold. It's neither fish nor fowl.
Well, that's funny. The last agent we went to thought it was both.
Well, Mr. Rockford, you mean you can't book us anywhere?
Well, actually, I don't have a thing open for a double. Have either of you considered doing a single?
What?
And break up the act?
Why, we've been together for years. You can't split Benny and Alan.
It's ridiculous. We're more than just a team. We're partners, friends, buddies. Why, we'd rather starve than let anything come between us.
Well, that's a shame because I've got an opening for a single in Scranton for $15 a week.
I'll take it.
That's the way you feel. I'll take it for $14 a week, Mr. Rockford.
Fred, you steal a job away from your partner, your buddy, your friend?
Some friend. What did you ever do for me?
Why, you puff-eyed ingrate. For years, we've lived off my violin, my brains, my talent, my jokes.
And my money. And listen, you miser. As for your violin playing, I have heard cleaner notes from a toothless Russian sipping borscht. You are just lucky you've had me and my clarinet.
Clarinet? The only way you could make a living with that clarinet is if you put a nail on the end of it and went out in the park. Mr. Rock, let you hire this low-talented wage cutter, I'll take the job for $10 a week.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'll take it for $8.
I'll take it for $5.
Well, I'll take it for $3.
Well, I'll take it for nothing.
So will I.
Well, at that price, I can afford both of you.
Yes, did you hear that? We're working.
Fred! Yes!
By 1937, Jack Benny had a contract with Paramount for 3 movies a year at $100,000 each. He also had the number one radio show in the country. For one radio show that season, an actor was needed to play the part of a Pullman porter. Many of Hollywood's top black actors auditioned for the role. Eddie Anderson, a relatively unknown song and dance man with a very unusual voice, got the part. His name in the script was Rochester, and it proved to be such a successful character that in a matter of weeks, Rochester became Mr. Benny's valet and a regular on the show, and proved to be one of the highlights of almost every Benny broadcast. Phil Harris filled in the details.
I helped audition Rochester, told him what to do, or helped him, not told him what to do, because he was always a great performer. But when Jack wanted to find a porter, you know, like we're coming on the Southern Pacific to Albuquerque or wherever it was, I don't know. And all of the black people at that time, which was very scarce because they were struggling, but they'd come in and they'd pronounce their I-N-G's and try to be very proper. And what Jack wanted was a black man that with the greatest humor in the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, this is the first week of spring. So let's go out to Jack Benny's home in Beverly Hills where we find Rochester doing the spring cleaning.
The vacuum's going, the dust is blowing, 'cause Benny's house must be clean. He doesn't really want his house clean. Just makes me work because he's mean.
Rochester.
The dirt may linger, won't lift his finger, all day in bed he reclines. But then in bed he has to recline. He isn't really 39.
Rochester.
Oh, hello, boss.
Hello.
Hello, boss.
Hello, Polly. Well, Rochester, I'm glad to see you're doing the spring cleaning. The house looks... Rochester, where are those pretty lace curtains we had on the windows?
Those were cobwebs. I brushed them off.
Well, the house is that dusty, it's your fault.
No, it isn't, boss. I could clean the house in no time if I could use a feather duster.
The feather duster? Well, why don't you use it?
It's spring. At this time of year, Polly falls in love with it.
Rochester, you're imagining things.
No, boss, he even talks to it.
Polly talks to the feather duster?
Yeah, this morning she stuck her head out of the cage and said, "Don't just stand there in the corner, come up and see me sometime."
Look.
I even had to put the duster in the cage to keep her happy.
Now, that's ridiculous. Now, go get it out of the cage and clean up the room.
Well, okay. Hello, Polly. I'm sorry, but I have to take the duster. Now, let go of it.
The sky is slow, the night is cold.
Let go, Polly. I gotta get the duster.
The moon is old, but love is old.
Let go.
This is a heart of my decision.
There, I got it.
Lover, come back to me.
Rochester, now that you got the feather duster, clean the chandelier.
I tried to, boss, but I can't reach it.
Well, I'll do it. Now, bend down, and I'll stand on your back.
Huh?
Go on, bend down.
Like this?
Yeah, bend down a little more. That's good. Now, let me get up on your back. Easy. Hold it. There. Okay, Rochester, hold still now while I dust the can.
Come in, come in!
Rochester!
In the 1940s, Jack added the Sportsman Quartet to the radio show. They were used to sing the commercials. For years, the Sportsmen, and the originals were Marty Spurzel, Max Smith, Gurney Bell, and Bill Days, all annoyed Jack with their silly jingles, singing them at very embarrassing times and places. Jack started firing the quartet on the air, of course, as early as 1947. He was still firing them in 1952.
Well, speaking of wasting time, Jack, I've been here now nearly a half hour, and you still haven't told me what you wanted me to come over for.
Oh, yes, Don, it's about the quartet.
The sportsman?
Yes. Now, I've been thinking this over seriously for quite a long time now, and I finally made up my mind. I'm going to fire them.
Fire them? But, Jack, they're one of the best singing groups in the country.
I'll admit that, but they never sing what I want them to. They're always singing crazy songs and embarrassing me. They have no respect for me. And anyway, Don, I want you to come with me to a lawyer because you're the one who's responsible for them.
Well, Jack, you don't have to go to your lawyer.
Yes, I do. I want them to break their contract.
But you don't have enough reasons to fire them.
Yes, I have.
But they're wonderful singers, Jack. They're very popular, too, and they have a lot of fans. In fact, plenty of people tune into your program just to hear them, not you.
That's another reason. Believe me.
Now, look, Jack, don't be hasty. Why don't you give them another chance?
Well, I don't like to fire people. In fact, during my entire career in show business, I don't think I ever fired anybody.
Well, what about that bald-headed writer you used to have? You fired him, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I stopped paying him his salary, and after a couple of years, he quit. That's all that happened.
Well, his partner didn't quit, and he's not with you anymore.
Well, he starved to death. But, Don, if I give the sportsmen another chance, do you think they'll mend their ways?
I'm sure of it, Jack.
Instead of those silly, crazy songs?
I'm just sure of it, Jack. In fact, I'll talk to them myself.
Well, all right. Let's forget about it.
Jack, I'm just as positive as I can be. You won't regret this. Well, I'm going to be running along.
Where are you going, Don?
Oh, nowhere in particular. I'll probably drop into the drugstore for some lunch.
Say, I'm kind of hungry, too. All right, yes, sir.
Yes, Mr. Benny?
Look, Mr. Wilson and I are going to have lunch at the drugstore. Come on, Don.
Okay, Jack.
Jack always referred to me as the announcer on his show, and actually, most people don't realize, or didn't at the time, that most of the commercials on the Benny Show, the opening and closing, particularly the serious commercials, were given by other people. I didn't do them. I participated in the integrated commercial in the middle of the show, that had the comedic touch to it as sort of a sleeping of the bitter pill, as it were. Many people thought commercials were at that time. So that I always did, of course.
Well, Jack, here's the drugstore.
Yeah. This is a good place to eat at. Come on, let's go in. All the tables seem to be taken. Let's get those two stools at the end of the counter. Say, Don...
Oh, excuse me a minute, Jack. Excuse me. The sportsmen are sitting over there.
The quartet? Where?
Yeah, over there in the corner. I want to talk to them a minute.
Well, remember, Don, will you give them a warning about what I said?
I'll talk to them about it.
You do. You drive me nuts. Shine on, harvest moon up in the sky. Yeah.
Now, fellas, please, do yourselves a favor. Take my advice. Don't sing that song for Jack. This is neither the time nor the place.
Oh, here he comes with that quartet.
Now, look, fellas, I'm telling you, for your own good.
What's the matter now, Don?
They want to sing a new number for you.
Here in the drugstore? I should say not. It'd be embarrassing.
I told you, fellas.
You see, Don, they won't listen to anybody. That's why I want to fire them.
But, Jack, they claim that this is a very beautiful song.
I don't care how beautiful
it is. Boys, he's mad at you anyway. Now, you better not do a thing.
Don, will you
boys,
keep on...
hold it, hold it.
Don, will
hold
you keep on singing?
Life could be a dream, Shaboom.
Shaboom?
If I could take you up in paradise above.
Shaboom.
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 If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love, life could be a dream, sweetheart.
What happened to Shaboom?
Oh, life could be a dream. Shaboom,
shaboom.
If only all my precious plans
would
come
true. Shaboom.
Shaboom. If you would let me spend my whole life loving you, life could be a dream.
Shaboom,
sweetheart.
Sweetheart? You've got to do something about these guys.
Something.
everything is on my mind. If you knew what I want you to do, baby, would it be so fine?
I hear that drugstore.
Life could be a dream. If I could take you up to paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one you love.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart, sweetheart. Shaboom, da boom, da boom, da boom, shaboom, sweetheart. Shaboom, da boom, da boom, da
boom, sweetheart. Now look at
him. As well as where
the drugstore.
I'm going to look in you will agree. Shaboom, boom, boom, shaboom, Mr. B.
Fellas, everybody's looking at us in the drug. Fellas, we're in the drug. Don, I told you. Fellas, right, we're in the drugstore. People are not eating. Wait a minute. Boy, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
It's interesting to me that in the mountains of mail that arrive here at Buckingham, where we produce the comedy show, that so many of the requests and inquiries about Jack Benny come from young people who couldn't possibly have heard him or seen him on television first time around. Well, that's great. I'm glad that Jack Benny's humor appeals to youngsters, and I'm glad you enjoy it, because we'll continue the Jack Benny special next week. Next week, Dennis Day and Mel Blanc. Mel, by the way, played Jack's violin teacher, the train announcer, the Maxwell automobile, and the voice of Polly the Parrot. They all tell how they joined the Benny Show. We'll hear about the contest called I Can't Stand the Jack Benny Program, dreamed up when the ratings were sliding. And we'll hear guests like Jimmy Stewart and Marilyn Monroe and Carol Burnett. And we'll hear his appearance, Jack's appearance on The Carson Show, and his last TV appearance. That's next week on The Comedy Show, written by Fred Zolanko, produced by Dan Randad and Paul Grunhauser. I'm Jack Carney, and The Comedy Show is a Buckingham production.
The Jack Benny Program. Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson.
All right. Mr. Benny, tell me something about Rochester, your butler.
Rochester?
Yes. How long has he been with you?
Well, Rochester's been with me 14 years. As a matter of fact, it'll be exactly 14 years in March.
Well, how did you happen to find Rochester?
I'm glad you asked me that. It's a very interesting story. 14 years...
Jack, I know how you found Rochester. Let's get on to the next question.
But wait a minute, Mary. I'm going to have to do it when they interview me on the program, so I might as well get it all clear in my mind now. 14 years ago, I was in New York. It was about the middle of March, 1937. The weather was so nice, I decided to take a little drive. I was driving along 7th Avenue, around 134th Street. In my Mary Maxwell car, I go roaming near and far. Oh, da-dum, 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 da-da-dum, bum, 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 bum. Ah, there's nothing like an auto ride on a day like this. Gosh, how time flies. Here it is, 1937. I've sure had this car a long time. I bought it secondhand, too. Got it from the Smiling Pilgrim. What am I laughing it up for? I'm all alone. In my Mary Maxwell car. Oh, what a beautiful day. The month of March can be so nice in New York. Trees beginning to bud, birds are singing. Gee, it's great to be alive. I'm glad Mary pulled that exhaust pipe out of my mouth. She was right, I did get another job. In my Mary Maxwell car, I go roaming near and...
How do you like that? Hey, you, this is all your fault.
My fault?
You think just because you drive a taxi, you can smash into other people's cars.
But, mister...
Don't but, mister, me. I'm going to sue you and your taxi company for damages. Because it was your fault.
But, mister, I was parked here when you hit me. This is a gas station.
Well, I can't understand how I could have run into you.
Neither can I. I was up on a grease rack.
Let me see your driver's license.
Okay, here it is.
March 18th, 1937. Issued to Rochester Van Jones. 5 feet 10 inches, 155 pounds, 31 years old, Orchichornia. What's that?
Dog eyes.
Card. Now, I'm going to take you into court and get every cent you've got in the world.
You can reach in my pocket and do that.
Well, you better think it over, and I'm willing to be reasonable. If you want to arbitrate and settle this out of court, I'll be home all afternoon.
Hey, do you think that the new taxi driver you hired will work out, Andy?
I don't know him.
I don't see why you had to hire a driver in the first place. We only got one cab and I can drive down.
Listen, Amos, when you reach our position in business world, you has got to have people working for you.
Yeah, well, I can't see where we has reached no position like that.
Listen, Amos. Do you realize that last month we lost less money than any month since we've been in business?
But there's a reason for that. Last month only had 28 days in it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Amos, if we can find a month short enough, we'll be able to break even.
Well, but Andy, I still think that we should wait till we start making money before we go around hiring people.
No, no, Amos. People is the thing. If we ain't got nobody working for us and we go bankrupt, there ain't going to be nobody sorry for us but us. And us ain't enough people to absorb all that sorrow.
Well, Andy, we ain't bankrupt yet, though.
I know, but we is getting into those long months.
I still think that I should deal with that driving that cab myself. Here comes Rochester, your new driver.
Hello there, Rochester. How was business this morning?
Bang up, gentlemen, bang up!
What you mean?
I had an accident with a man named Jack Benny.
Jack Benny? Oh, that must be the radio comedian.
If it is, this is really bad. He's supposed to be the cheapest man in the world.
Cheapest man in the world?
Yes, sir. I hear he lives so close to his money that even his skin feels like an outsider. Also here that he's got a zipper on his wallet that has yet to make his first zip.
What a man he must be.
Oh, he can't be so bad, gentlemen. In fact, he said he'd be home all afternoon if we wanted to arbitrate.
Wanted to arbitrate who?
The man said arbitrate.
Arbitrate. Well, now, there, if that ain't a coincidence. Arbitrate happens to be the one word in the English language with which I ain't familiar.
Arbitrate. To settle a dispute. That's it, General. I think Mr. Benny wants to settle
this
dispute.
Oh, I do that all the time. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, well, Kingfish, you better come along with us. We got to go to see this man that Rochester accidented with.
Yeah, well, you go along in my place, Kingfish. I better take the taxi cab over to the shop and fix it.
Yeah, okay, we better go. And remember, when we seize the man, let's all arbitrate in the same direction.
Yeah, we'll have to watch that. Come on, let's get on over there. Come on.
Well, here we is, Kingfish. This is the right place, ain't it, Rochester?
That's what it says here on the card.
Yeah, good.
Yes?
Excuse us for protruding, but I was general manager, general counsel, and everything else for the Fresh Air Taxi Cab Company of America eliminated.
Yeah. And I as likewise.
Oh, yes. You men are here about the accident. Come right in. I presume that your driver has informed you of the circumstances and my position in this case.
Oh, yes, sir. He done did that. Now, Mr. Benny, if you'll just make us out a check for $50, we'll forget the whole thing.
Me pay you? Listen, you start those tactics with me, you won't even get to first base.
Yeah?
We have done considered the thing from every angle, and we want to give you the benefit of all the brick and make a settlement in your favor. That's what we want to do.
Oh, well, that's different.
Yeah, now, Mr. Benny, we're going to take our cards out of our sleeve and lay them right on the table. Now, if you'll just bring your valet in here to witness this.
Valet? I don't have a valet.
No valet? A man of your social position? A man who is the star of stage, screen, and radio? And who has done nominated himself for an Academy Award? A man like you has got no valet?
Well, I...
No valet?
Well, I to tell you, fellas, I've been thinking a long time of getting a valet, but somehow the right man hasn't come along.
Ha, ha, ha. He's here now.
Yes, sir, he's here already.
Gentlemen, stop forming a circle around me.
Quiet, Rochester, quiet. And shake hands with your new boss.
Wait a minute, not so fast.
Come on in, we gotta go.
Now, wait a minute.
Goodbye, Mr. Benny.
Good luck, Rochester.
Well, Mr. Benny, as long as I'm working for you now, don't you think we ought to discuss money?
Well, yes, Rochester. What do you think would be a fair salary?
I ain't gonna get that, so let's start somewhere else.
Good, good. Grab that vacuum cleaner. We can talk as we walk.